hopes for justice to prevail, and for her father to realize what a monster Connell is. But the rest of her knows better. Her father has always been right. The only true justice is having the strength to protect oneself against invasion or conquest. If the city calls you, listen to it, she murmurs to herself. Her mother's words. And Sao Paulo echoed this, telling her that the city needed her. But Aislinn decides in this moment to ignore the call. Her borough is what protected her. Not Manhattan, or Queens, or Brooklyn, or the Bronx. Staten Island. Everything she needs in life is right here. The city can go hang. With this thought in mind, she falls into bed and exhausted sleep. A few miles away, in a trash-strewn train yard, MTA engineers and police gather and murmur, mystified by a series of four massive parallel trenches that have appeared, breaching the tracks of Staten Island's lone, nameless subway line. The trenches were actually glowing hot and smoking when they were first discovered by a sleepy conductor going off shift, as if they weren't dug, but sliced into the gravelly earth with a giant hot knife, or maybe an industrial-strength laser. Since then, they've cooled off enough that investigators can put ladders down to try to figure out what kind of incendiary device could have caused such damage. Each trench is 15 or 16 feet at its deepest point, shearing through soil, metal, concrete, bedrock, and even the electrified third rail. As if someone rent the earth itself with great girder-sized claws. Repairs will be simple enough. Fill the holes with rebar and cement. Replace the broken tracks, though they will take several days. In that time, many of the island's poorest people will struggle to get to and from work, or to visit their sick parents or to pick up their kids from school. A city's commuter conduits are its lifeblood. And sometimes even shallow wounds fester. Aislinn sleeps. Chapter 11. Yeah, so about that whole teamwork thing. Branka hates them instantly, these avatars of the other boroughs who now sit or stand in her office. Brooklyn's the one who pisses her off the most. Oh, she recognizes the woman at once. MC Free, one of the first female MCs from back in the old days, who'd felt plenty free to start beefs with every other woman in the field and drop all the same kinds of homophobic bullshit that the men had done, while having the nerve to call herself feminist. Figures she'd turn politician. Also figures she's the one who turns up her nose at the messiness of Branka's office, refusing to sit on an available chair because it's got dried oil paint on it. But Manhattan is no better, with his friendly smile that shows too many teeth. She thinks at first that he might be kin. Something about the set of his features feels familiar, even though he's obviously so multiracial that he could be anything. Then she finds herself leaning toward him, listening to him a little more than the others as he speaks, and belatedly, she gets it. Maybe the Dutch smiled like that when they gave trinkets to people of the Canarsie, a band of the Lenape, and laid sole claim to what all others had shared for millennia. Probably every ethnic group he meets thinks he's one of theirs, at least partially. It's a subtle manipulative bit of magic, and Branka resents the fuck out of it as soon as she figures it out. Queens is the one Branka probably shouldn't hate, because she's just a girl too overwhelmed by everything to be one of the movers and shakers in this. But Branka finds herself distrusting the girl's apparent innocence anyway. She's Queens! Queens can't possibly be that gormless. But of course, Branka herself is the Bronx, and the Bronx don't trust nobody but the Bronx. So maybe her distaste for everyone else is just as inexorable as Manhattan's charm. If so, she leans into it, because it's been a rough few days, and she doesn't feel like trying to be better. "I don't need you," Branka says. It's the third time she's said it, and they're not listening. She's about to throw them out. "I pushed that Kulo in white out after she attacked my place. Did it by myself. I needed you then, and none of you were here, so I handled it. And I don't need you now." They all look at each other. Brooklyn sighs and turns away, either giving up or just not caring. So Manhattan's the one who tries again. He's smooth, she'll give him that. Could talk rings around Raoul. Yi Jing's probably gonna throw him her panties when he leaves Branka's office. "I don't think I understand your objection," he says. "Manny," he calls himself. "It's bullshit. He's bullshit. That's her objection." But he actually has the nerve to look hurt. "We all know what we are. I know you feel it too. Why choose to protect only one borough when by working with us, you can secure the whole city?" "Because I fight my battles alone," she snaps. "Always have. And because when I do work with others, I prefer to do it alongside people who would walk through fire for me. Will you?" Of course, he frowns. "Maybe. I have to get to know you first." At least he's honest. "Well then, I don't want to know you, so." "The fire we've got to walk through is here now, sis," says Brooklyn. But she says it with her back to Branka, while looking through the office's inner window at the exhibit hall beyond. It's disrespectful as fuck, and Branka suspects Brooklyn's not even trying to be disrespectful. She's just naturally an asshole. "Door's hot, alarm's going off, stop, drop, and roll." "I'm not your sis. And don't act like you'd piss on me to put the fire out." Poor Queens. She gave another name, but Branka doesn't remember it, and anyway, she's Queens. Just looks confused. "Do you all know each other?" she asks the room. "I feel like there's bad blood here."
"Always bad blood between the Bronx and the rest of the city," Brooklyn says.
Branka's nastiness has finally earned her full attention, however. She's turned to face Branka now, with her arms folded and an, "Oh, so it's like that," expression.
"Time for the earrings to come off, then." Branka braces herself. "Plenty of good stuff here in this borough. Lots of good people. But they can never get their stuff together enough to exploit it properly. So when everybody else does, the Bronx throws a shit fit and claims it's disrespect. It ain't even that, though, sis, see?"
Brooklyn plasters a thin smile on her face.
"Disrespect would mean we care."
Branka plants her hands on her desk and pushes to her feet.
"You can see yourself right the fuck out my office."
Brooklyn snorts and is halfway to the door before Branka can draw another breath. Manny glares after Brooklyn, but then spreads his hands to plead with Branka.
"None of us is going to survive this alone. Get out."
They leave. They stare at her like she's crazy while they do it, but they go. In their wake, Branka sits down again. She's shaking. She doesn't know what she feels. She's eaten half a donut. She's running on a couple of hours of sleep amid one of the worst three-day periods of her life. And she has faced death at least twice in that period. Maybe three times. She has an idea that if she'd been any less powerful in the moment that she kicked the bathroom stall door open, well, at least twice. Maybe she's being irrational. In fact, she's pretty sure she's being irrational. But for fuck's sake, they were getting on her nerves. She's sitting there, seething and staring at the uneaten half of the donut, when the door opens. She inhales at once to start shouting again, but it's Vanessa. Vanessa is always okay. So Branka subsides into quiet seething, while Vanessa comes over and sits down in the chair that Manhattan, whatever he calls himself, once occupied. She just looks at Branka, expressionless. That's enough. Branka crumples beneath this gentle, silent admonishment, falling onto the desk and putting her forehead down on her hands.
I can't take this, she says.
It's more of a sob than a declaration.
I'm too fucking old for this. I'm scared. And I can't go home, and I'm not me anymore. I can't. I just can't.
Vanessa takes a deep breath and blows it out through pursed lips.
Yeah, I figured they were hitting you with a lot all at once.
She's silent for a moment. Vanessa has always known when to let Branka have silence.
Want me to tell them to come back later?
Tell them to never come back.
But she knows that's not going to fly. So she sucks in a breath to let Vanessa know she's not completely crazy.
Tell them to give me an hour.
Gotcha.
But Vanessa's got more to say. Branka's pretty sure, since she doesn't move. After a long moment in which Branka finally starts to calm down, Vanessa says,
you know, I hated New York before I met you.
You are the one who showed me how to love it.
Kiss my ass.
Branka says it to the desk. She's sulking, and she knows it, and she wallows in it.
I hate this city.
Yeah? Well, you New Yorkers, everybody except the new ones, always say that. It's dirty, and there's too many cars, and nothing's maintained where it should be, and it's too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter, and it stinks like unwashed ass most of the time. But ever notice how none of you ever fucking leave? Yeah. Now and then, somebody's elderly mom gets sick down in New Mexico or something, and you go live with her, or you have kids, and you want them to have a real yard, so you'll bump them off to Buffalo. But most of you just stay here, hating this city, hating everything, and taking it out on everybody.
Your cheering up technique needs work.
But then you meet somebody fine at the neighborhood block party.
Or you go out for Vietnamese pierogies or some other bizarre shit that you can't get anywhere but in this dumbass city.
Or you go see an off-Broadway fringe festival play nobody else has seen.
Or you have a random encounter on the subway that becomes something so special and beautiful that you'll tell your grandkids about it someday.
And then you love it again. It glows off of you, like a damn aura.
She shakes her head, smiling to herself a little wistfully.
I get on the train to go home every day, and sometimes I look around and I see all these people glowing, filled with the beauty of this city.
Branka, frowning, lifts her head to stare at Vanessa. Vanessa is looking through the glass block window that dominates one side of Branka's office. You can't really see anything through it. It's just the blurry shapes of people as they pass along the sidewalk and the occasional bus. Still, it's a little bit of the city, moving and vivid and alive. The colors and light of the glass play over Vanessa's face in a way that makes her momentarily ethereal. For not the first time, Branka wishes that she'd had a daughter. Vanessa is amazing. Everything she could have wished for in a child. But Branka is content to have an amazing friend instead. With a slow, tired smile, Branka sighs.
Okay. An hour. Uninterrupted.
Then she will apologize to the other parts of herself, swallow a bit of pride, and join them as she knows she should. She still doesn't fucking like them, and might never. But She needs them to save the city that Veneza loves. That's enough of a reason to put up with all this shit.
Veneza grins as if she hears this thought and heads out to tell the others.
Branka's surprised by how much the others don't know. She is the one who was given to know the history of the whole business, but she thought they would have gotten something. It lessens her anger a little. If they literally had to figure out everything from scratch, including how to find each other, then maybe she can cut them some slack. It also turns out that they intended to find her the previous day, but then they lost it to Brooklyn, nearly burning herself out by sealing off the entirety of her burrow. Branka resists the urge to yell at them about this, because they're not supposed to do that. They need each other working together to amplify the power and reduce resistance and do other stuff for which there are no words. They need the primary avatar to focus all of it. But she can't yell at them, not even Brooklyn, because they didn't know. And really, that's her fault. So it's time she explains a few things. While Yi Jing and Jess handle the business of the center, Branka has a sit-down with her fellow burrows in the staff break room. Veneza's there too, mostly to keep Branka in line, she jokes, but it's not really a joke, and Branka is grateful for her presence. The others give Veneza the hairy, confused eye for a moment. Then Veneza starts offering around the bag of microwave popcorn she's brought. Queens goes, "Ooh, kettle corn." And that's it. Veneza's in. It's actually been several hours rather than just one, because Branka had to divert some time to interviews by two news crews who showed up unannounced to cover the vandalism and arrests. Naturally, spotting a city council member on the premises, they roped Brooklyn Thomason into commenting, too. Brooklyn gave a pretty good impromptu speech, too, answering the question of what a council member from a different borough is doing helping a Bronx institution with, "An attack on the Bronx is an attack on all of New York," which even has the virtue of being true. So now they're all sitting around eating delivery pho. With real food in her, Branka's inclined to be a little less of an asshole, so they're all getting along better. Brooklyn even apologized for being an asshole back, and it turns out they actually tried to call her when it became clear they wouldn't make it to the center before this morning. Uselessly. Voicemails full of hate messages, and nobody listened to it. They're all buddies now, which is good, because Branka's got some stuff to tell them. "Okay, so," she begins, "we've got to find Staten Island. With four of us together, that should actually be pretty easy. We're already calling to her, but together we can narrow down her location and go to her if she doesn't find us first. But what we really need to focus on, even while we're looking for SI, is tracking down the primary avatar." They stare at her like she's just spoken in Munsee. She checks with Veneza, because sometimes when she's tired, she does slip into that. She spent a few years trying to learn the language when she was younger, and it comes out at odd times now. Veneza shakes her head. "Nope. Just incomprehensible English, then."
"So there really is a sixth one,"
Brooklyn finally says. She throws a look that Branka can't read at Manhattan. "Good Lord.
Yeah, there's a sixth one. You didn't know that?"
Now both Queens and Brooklyn are looking at Manhattan. Manhattan grimaces a little, then takes a deep breath.
"We suspected. But our source for information was that woman."
He doesn't need to describe her. Branka nods. They all know who the woman is.
"And, a vision."
Okay, that's not something Branka was expecting to hear. She raises her eyebrows.
"A vision."
He's light-skinned enough to blush visibly, which is almost cute. Then Queens clears her throat and adds,
I saw it too. We all did. That's how we knew it wasn't just, car exhaust fumes.
But we didn't know what to make of it, Manhattan continues. He still looks distinctly embarrassed.
Branka's starting to wonder what exactly happened in this vision of his.
None of us really understands how this works, or why it's happened to us. So naturally, we've, had a lot of denial to work through first.
Can't see why you would, Vanessa mutters under her breath, though more than loudly enough for all of them to hear.
Squiggly shit coming out the damn walls?
Manhattan shakes his head and focuses on Branka. You seem to understand more about this than the rest of us. How?
Branka's briefly tempted to spin them some bullshit about it being a Lenape legend.
She doesn't, because she's too tired for bullshit. So she says, all cities know it. It's like, I don't know, ancestral memory or something. It comes from the other cities that have made it this far. When we become avatars, the knowledge pops into our head. Or in our case, since the six of us, one is the usual for most cities. The knowledge popped into my head. I have to admit, though, I figured you guys would have gotten at least some backwash.
There are a lot of things in my head, Manhattan says without apparent irony.
Nothing about why cities turn into us.
He gestures around the table.
Yeah, well, Branka says, there's stuff we can all do, but then each of us gets unique skills on top of that, because each borough contributes different strengths to what makes New York what it is.
Bronx has the most history. Endless generations of Lenape stretching down the lines of the past, changed, though not destroyed, by colonialism. The survivors moved to South Jersey and thrived, but the Bronx is their ancestral land.
So I got the memory of what came before.
I don't think I got any weird skills, Queen says. She sounds sad about it.
Brooklyn considers. She looks tired, Branka realizes at last, and when she recalls why Brooklyn is so tired, the realization pivots her perception of Brooklyn just a little. Securing her burrow had wiped her out for the whole day, and she's lucky it didn't put her down for longer. Maybe her manner is not so much distance and hauteur as exhaustion and some kind of simmering anger, the latter not aimed at Branka, though, as Branka has seen, Brooklyn's more than willing to let rip at all comers. But there's something going on with her, something besides turning into a living city. Branka files it away for later.
I'm not sure if I got any weird abilities either, Brooklyn says. I hear the city's music, but maybe that's just because, you know, former musician.
Manhattan's got that distant look on his face again. Branka pokes at it deliberately.
Well? That painting downstairs, the one the vandals defaced, which you call a self-portrait of unknown? That was the vision I had. That exact thing. Same angle. Same lighting. I couldn't see his face either.
Interesting.
So you know where he is? Asks Branka.
No. If I knew, I would be there.
Manhattan shifts, a momentary irritation flickering over his expression before he controls it.
He's alone, and that woman is after him. Someone has to protect him. I am supposed to protect him.
He blinks once and pauses, and there is something about his manner that hints at sudden surprise.
I am supposed to protect him.
Sounds like we've found your thing, then, Brooklyn drawls. Queens, the kind soul, leans forward and puts a hand on his shoulder. We'll find him, she says.
Yes. And then Manhattan's gaze shifts, sun to moon, warm to ice. The speed of the change is breathtaking, and Branka doesn't unnerve easy. He's not even looking at her. Just the floor, speaking his desire into existence.
We will.
And God help anyone who gets in his way.
Branka shakes her head, though, just to warn him that she's got nothing good to offer on that count.
I don't know where the primary is either, and we might not be able to find him without Staten Island.
But to track him down, we have to, become what we are in the other place. Here.
Suddenly, it's hard to explain. Not because of English, but because words are inadequate. They all nod as if they get it, though.
Okay, so far so good.
Warming up to her subject, Branka leans forward.
When we do, we'll see the full complexity of our existence. There will be a deep point that draws us in. That will be him. Then we switch back to this world and voila, we'll know him in this world too, if it works.
Queens is looking around at all of them.
Wait, so all these, well, I guess, visions I keep having of us as both people and as huge cities are me seeing into an actual place? I thought the whole thing was just, I don't actually know how to say it. Representations of the world, like a mandala?
Branka says, I don't know anything about mandalas. It is a representation of this world, if that's what you mean. But it's also a world in itself, a real one, where things like position and distance and size don't mean the same thing as here.
It sounds a lot like different things I've read about over the years. The Australian Dreamtime, Jung's collective unconscious, vision quests and sweats like what some of my people do.
Oh, I thought you were Latina. You're the other kind of Indian.
Original flavor, baby, says Vanessa, hunting in her popcorn bag for any remaining kernels. This side of the planet, anyway.
Branka rubs at her short hair. She really needs some sleep. And it feels weird to be telling this story now in the summertime. Stories are for winter, when the animals have gone to sleep. That was what her mother always said. But maybe this doesn't count as a story, so much as a lesson.
So, here's the thing,
she tells them.
All of that stuff is true. All the other worlds that human beings believe in via group myths or spiritual visitations or even imaginations, if they're vivid enough, they exist. Imagining a world creates it if it isn't already there. That's the great secret of existence. It's super sensitive to thought. Decisions, wishes, lies, that's all you need to create a new universe. Every human being on this planet spins off thousands between birth and death. Although there's something about the way our minds work that keeps us from noticing. In every moment, we're constantly moving in multiple dimensions. We think we're sitting still, but we're actually falling from one universe to the next to the next. So fast that it all blends together like animation. Except there's a lot more than just images flipping past.
She stops to see if they're following. They're more than following. All of them are staring at her completely rapt. It's a little unnerving. But Branka knows why. Because on some level, they can perceive it. Because of what they've all become, their minds work differently now. It's a lot easier to explain something that people already innately understand. So she takes it to the next level and makes the gesture that she did for Vanessa. One flat hand topping the other. Then she ladders them, layer over layer over layer.
What we are transcends the layers between worlds. Actually, when a city is born, when we are reborn as cities, the birth process kind of smashes through them.
She keeps holding one hand flat, then arrows the other down into it, making the flat hand crumple and curl up.
What we are, what we're made of, is many worlds coming together. Reality and legends. This world where we're just people, and that world where we can be miles-wide cities that just happen to be sitting a couple of feet across from each other because the laws of space, physics, don't work the same way. Manhattan blinks, realizing something. When I first arrived, there was damage there. Busted lights, cracks in the ground, like an earthquake had happened. And as soon as I became part of the city, I forgot my name.
You forgot?
Okay, maybe Branka's gonna have to cut them a lot of slack.
What, like amnesia?
He nods, jaw set and brows furrowed, then glances at the others.
All of us have a similar story. Sometime in the morning, the day before yesterday, we all had a moment.
That's when the city changed. I think I arrived here right after that moment. Something happened in that moment. Some kind of fight. That was the damage I saw, and I think the loss of my memory is how it affected me in this world.
Then, not long after, that thing on FDR Drive.
He puts a hand to his side and grimaces as if his ribs hurt. But it's memory, and he lowers his hand after a moment.
If I hadn't stopped it, it would have killed me.
That's the takeaway here. Something hurts the city, it hurts us. Something kills us, and...
what?
The city dies?
More like explodes,
Branka says. Silence. They're all staring at her.
Yeah, she kinda figured that would get their attention.
So, she says, sitting forward, this process?
It happens all the time, all over the world, wherever there's a city. Enough human beings occupy one space, tell enough stories about it, develop a unique enough culture, and all those layers of reality start to compact and metamorphose. Eventually, when it's close to that, moment,
she nods to Manhattan for the word,
the city picks someone to be its midwife, champion, a person who represents the city and protects it as we do. But that person gets the job even before the city becomes something new. That person helps it happen.
Poor sucker,
mutters Vanessa. Manhattan frowns at her.
If all goes well, Branka continues, the city becomes whole. The enemy can't touch a whole city, not directly, or at least not without a lot of effort. But the birthing process can go wrong. If the enemy catches the primary avatar, for example, and rips him to shreds before the city can do its thing, then the city isn't born. It dies. It dies hard. We don't know the names of some of the cities that have died this way, but the ones we do know will tell you what we're up against. Pompeii, Tenochtitlan, Atlantis.
Atlantis isn't a real thing, says Brooklyn. Then before Branka can say it, she inhales.
Or it isn't a real thing anymore. What you're saying is that it was a real thing once, but its avatar failed.
Branka nods.
In Plato's stories, Atlantis was swallowed up by earthquake and floods. But the real disaster is that Atlantis became just a story. It failed so catastrophically that the entire human race shifted into a branch of realities in which Atlantis never existed at all.
They all stare at her and each other.
Holy shit,
Vanessa murmurs, which seems to cover everyone's expressions.
Jesus, B.
Branka lets out a slow, careful breath.
Yeah. But we're good on that count. Our primaries succeeded. New York obviously survived.
Now they all start talking at once. Manhattan blurts, then why is he sleeping? And Brooklyn pronounces,
well, something seems to have gone wrong.
And Queens shakes her head and says in an irritated tone,
then why does he need us?
And Vanessa gives Branka a skeptical look and says,
are you sure about that? Because squiggly shit.
As noisy and rude as children. Branka pushes through their talking.
It survived,
she says, and pauses till they shut up, which at least doesn't take long.
But the battle was hard, and the primary, who did not understand that we were necessary to him, fought alone.
brave, strong young man, her unknown.
He won, but it took all his strength. He fell into, well, I guess we could call it a coma. He can't wake up, can't strengthen the city as he should until we find him. And we need to find him. We are not supposed to do this alone.
With deliberate emphasis on his last line, she looks at Brooklyn, who still radiates visible weariness even after they allowed her a day to recover. Brooklyn, already frowning, catches this look and understands instantly, inhaling a little. But then, surprisingly, she turns to gaze at Manhattan.
Guess I owe you more than I thought. Bad time for a coma.
Manhattan nods, looking amused. If I'd realized what was happening sooner, I would have helped more. Next time, don't go charging off in your pajamas alone. Meanwhile, Queens has shaken off her irritation. Now she looks excited.
The equations always suggested simultaneous events, not purely conditional. The cat is alive and dead in the box. A universe for each outcome, and probably one in which it's both.
She beams at all of them, clearly expecting them to share her excitement.
Right,
Manhattan says. Queens sighs with the air of someone who is used to not being understood. She takes out her phone and starts texting someone, her bottom lip poked out a little. Brooklyn's expression turns grim. To Bronca, she says.
You said becoming a city punches through other universes.
So she's not stupid. Bronca inclines her head to the woman, in respect, if not in approval.
Yes.
Okay, so, Brooklyn visibly braces herself. So what happens to those universes that our city punches through?
Manhattan's got a terrible look on his face. Queens goes on an entire face journey, shock to calculation, to dawning horror, to anguish. She puts her hands to her mouth.
They die,
Bronca says. She's decided to be compassionate about it, but relentless. None of them can afford sentimentality.
The punching through? It's a mortal wound, and that universe folds out of existence.
Every time a city is born, no, really, before that. The process of our creation, what makes us alive, is the death of hundreds or thousands of other closely related universes, and every living thing in them.
Brooklyn shuts her eyes for a moment.
Oh my God, Queens breathes. Oh my God, we are all mass murderers.
What's done is done, though,
Manhattan says. His voice is soft, his gaze distant and unreadable.
From the moment we came to be.
Queens flinches and stares at him open-mouthed.
How can you say that? What's wrong with you? That's, what, trillions of people? I can't even begin to calculate it. All dead. And we killed them?
She looks on the verge of tears. Her hands have begun to shake.
For fuck's sake!
Bronca's expecting Manhattan to go cold again. He does that so easily, she's noticed, even in just the few hours that they've known each other. Instead, however, he looks away for a moment, then takes a deep breath and moves to kneel in front of Queens. He takes her shaking hands in his own and looks her in the eye and says,
Would you prefer to offer up all of your family and friends to die instead?
Maybe there's a way we can. Everyone goes still. It sounds like a threat, even though it's just a suggestion. Bronca's not sure how Manhattan makes such a quiet statement sound so awful, but maybe it's the fact that there is compassion in his gaze instead of coldness when he says it. Coldness would be reprehensible, horrifying. Compassion is worse, because it cannot be dismissed as evil. And Padmini stares at him for a long, pent moment. Then slowly, her shakes still. She shuts her eyes and lets out a long breath. Manhattan doesn't move, doesn't press. It's not the approach that Bronca would have taken. But then Branka's approach would probably have been wrong. Something about Queens makes Branka feel toward her as she does toward Vanessa, as if Queens is younger than she actually is, a surrogate daughter to be protected. She isn't, though. Padmini is Queens, land of refugees who fled horrors, blue-collar people working themselves to death, and spare daughters mortgaged for an entire family's future. She knows all about brutal choices and unavoidable sacrifice. And Manhattan's question, cruel as it seems, is one that respects this knowledge. Finally, like the shading of the evening sky toward night, Branka sees the change come over Queens as she accepts the inevitable. She doesn't slump, but there is nevertheless an air of sorrow about her as she presses her lips together.
"Of course not," she says to Manhattan. "It just pisses me off, that's all."
She takes her hands out of his, but then nods to him in graceful concession.
"The world might be awful, but we don't have to like it that way."
Manhattan, to Branka's surprise, smiles at this with his own air of sorrow.
"Exactly," he says.
Then he gets up and goes over to the little window that looks out on the main gallery, his back to them. Branka lets out a long, uneasy sigh. This was hard knowledge for her, too, when it came, and yet...
"It's all so nature," she says. "Many things die so that something else can live. Since we're the ones who get to live, we should offer thanks to those worlds for contributing themselves to our survival. And we owe it to them, as well as to our own world's people, to struggle as hard as we can."
Queens and Vanessa stare at her. This is a general problem of city people, Branka knows, because she, too, was born and raised in a city and had to learn the lesson late in life. Chris took her hunting once over her vehement objections. And though Branka would not fire the gun that took down the deer, Chris and the other indigenous woman they'd been hunting with had made Branka help with the butchery. It was important, they told her, to know where her food came from and to understand that not just one, but many deaths had enabled her survival. Therefore, it was crucial that she use every part of the animal, as much as she could, and take no more than she needed. To kill under those circumstances, or to survive, was respectful. To kill for any other reason was monstrous. Manhattan gets this, Branka notes. So does Brooklyn, who has probably seen some shit in her day. And Branka suspects, so does the avatar of New York City, in his peaceful, enchanted sleep. It seems like a New York sort of thing to understand. After a moment, Manhattan takes a deep breath and turns back to them.
"So what's our next step?" he asks. "Since you seem to understand best how this works."
"Now we find Staten Island."
"Problem," Brooklyn says. She holds up her phone for some reason. "I've had my people on this, the ones who aren't trying to figure out who stole my damn house. And there hasn't been a single bit of weirdness on social media that we can zero in on."
It's Branka's turn to be confused.
"Weirdness to zero in on?"
They explain their process to her, and Branka finally gives up being angry with them for not finding her until now. The whole thing is entirely too loosey-goosey for her tastes. But the gist of it is that their method's not working with respect to Staten Island, which is about what Branka expected.
"Staten Island? Gonna Staten Island?"
They go around for a while before Brooklyn finally sighs and rubs her eyes.
"Look, there's enough of us now to just go there, rent some zip cars, and drive around until our city door or whatever it is kicks in. It's the only thing I can think of to do."
"I don't know how to drive," says Queens. "Sorry."
Vanessa leans over to her.
"I couldn't drive till last year. Solidarity, babe. And maybe we should concentrate on trying to find the primary avatar anyhow," Brooklyn concludes.
It sounds like he's the more important target anyway. At least we're all, awake and able to defend ourselves if those white things or the woman in white finds us. Staten Island must be able to do it too, since the island's not a crater right now.
It's harder fighting alone, Queen says, looking troubled. Scarier, because you don't really know what's going on.
We'll find her as soon as we can, Manhattan says. But if there's a way to find the primary...
He looks at Branka, leaving this sentence a question.
Maybe, Branka says. Like I said, it might not work without all five of us. But we can try it now, if you want.
I want, Manhattan says. The other two aren't as decisive about it, but they at least look interested.
Should I go?
Vanessa asks, frowning at Branka.
Shit gets weirder when you guys are doing, weird stuff.
It should be safe. But up to you, Branka says.
To the others, she adds,
Now, do whatever you normally do to step into that other place. Meditate, pray, sing, whatever.
Math, says Queens. She looks sheepish.
I never got anything less than 100% in math back in high school. Stupid kids made fun of me for it, called me Math Queen. Like I would think that's an insult. I'm a bloody math goddess.
She flushes, apparently realizing that she has digressed.
Anyway, when I, engage with that other part of me, I do math in my head.
Whatever floats your boat, kiddo, Branka says.
Brooklyn nods thoughtful, then falls silent. After a moment, she starts murmuring softly to herself, or maybe sub-vocalizing, and bobbing her head to some inner rhythm as she concentrates. Only Manhattan looks troubled.
I've never controlled it, he says. It just comes to me whenever I'm, feeling New Yorkish.
And when you think about him,
Brooklyn says, pausing in her freestyling, or whatever she's doing. He blinks, then sobers.
Yeah.
Branka shakes her head slowly.
Well, you did say you're, I guess, his bodyguard. If he's your thing, then that's what you've got to go with.
Yeah, okay.
He sighs and rubs at the back of his head. More quietly,
I don't know what this means.
Branka shrugs, then offers her usual solution for awkward interpersonal interactions.
It means you ask him out for coffee once he's awake, and then you hope for the best, same as regular people.
He blinks, then chuckles a little, relaxing as if Branka calling a spade, has finally made him feel better about the whole thing. Probably gets laid a lot with that face. But no idea how to do an actual relationship. Also figures that the personification of Manhattan is two-spirit, too. She snorts a little at the thought. Maybe Stonewall was worth something after all. Anyway.
Let's get to it,
she says. She isn't in quite the right headspace for a spiritual journey. Not here in this cold place, lit too brightly by fluorescence and smelling a little too much of chemicals and cleaning solvents. Still, they're standing in the Bronx right now, with her people's songs still reverberating through the ground. No need for a journey at all, really. Her city is right here. Branka feels the change before she opens her eyes, because all of a sudden she has become vast. She stretches upward because her sprawl is checked on all sides and downward into the tunnels and caverns that are her route. When she opens her eyes, the world is strange and the sky is twilight and she beholds herself, bright and dark, a spirit form of blurred lines and stained concrete and built over brickyards. She is the Bronx. And around her suddenly, joined and overlapping in a way that somehow does not create paradox or cause pain, are her kin. Bright Manhattan, tall and shining, but with the deepest of shadows between his dagger-like skyscrapers. jittery, jagged queens, pan-amorous in her welcome to all, genius in her creative hustle and determination to put down roots. Brooklyn is old, family solid, a deep-rooted thing of brown stone and marble halls and crumbling tenements. Last stop for the true-born of New York before they are forced into the wilderness of horror of horrors, Long Island. And together, they turn and behold their lost sister at last, Staten Island. She is dim compared to their light, suburban where they are dense, thinly populated in comparison to their teeming millions. There are actually farms somewhere amid her substance, and yet, she bristles with tiny throwing daggers in the shape of ferries and defensive fortifications built in semi-attached two-family blocks. They can feel the strength and attitude of her, blazing more brightly than any sodium lamp. She is so different, so reluctant. But whether she wants to be or not, and whether the rest of them are willing to admit it or not, she is clearly, truly, New York. It's strange, though. Even though Staten Island is right there, and there is no space in this place, she's somehow also distant from them, and dimmer than she should be, her high-rises shadowed and streets oddly clouded, as if something's laid down fog in thick, obscuring lines. Branka reaches but cannot touch her. Manhattan tries too and comes closest, his bustling businesses almost brushing her commuter hubs. But at the last moment, she shies away. Very strange. Not the only one they've come for, however. The others stir restlessly, so Branka takes hold of the wheel of them and spins it. She is the guide. And in order to see where the singularity of New York is, she must back out of the other world. She must shift her perception up a level and then up again until it becomes possible to see the entire universe. She feels Queen's awe because she alone understands the scale of what they are seeing. But Branka shies away from the girl's eager grasp of the numbers. They are immense. They contain multitudes. That'll do for Branka. And then they shift up again. Before them floats the immensity of space and time as Branka now understands it. Not just here, but everywhere. Not one universe, but an infinity of them. It is an endlessly growing broccoli-esque mass here in the no place of perception. Each branch consists of thousands of universes stacked atop each other like plates of mica, forming columns that snake around and branch off. Dominoes set up by someone with no sense of order. There is an order to it, and she hears another part of herself, Queens, thinking loudly, a fractal tree. But in its immensity and dynamism, in the ferociously energetic churn of creation, it's almost an overwhelming thing to grasp. Not limitless, as Branka first thinks, but vast beyond her ability to easily imagine. 1,000 branches that Branka can see grow and then crank out 2,000 fissioned-off children that then generate 4,000 grandchildren and... But abruptly, there is a hollow thump and a ripple, and one of the bigger thickets of branches collapses before them. It happens so fast. There is a fleeting blue-shifted glow, and then that whole twisting cluster burns away, all the way back to the stem it branched off from. Branka feels the others shudder in anguish and horror, and she shares it. As beautiful as that brightly burning chain is, like the most amazing fireworks ever, they all know what it means. Countless universes have just died. Or become as never were, like the branchings that must once have spawned Atlantis. But Branka draws their attention to what floats in this branch's place, tiny but bright, not connected to the other universes, but blazing and stable all on its own. A singular point of light. Branka spins them, and again they behold themselves. They are such a light. They have witnessed the birth of another city, like themselves, somewhere in the universe. Many such lights dot the tree, interspersed among its splits and folds, thousands of cities, glowing like jewels against the formless dark. There are places in the distance that seem to lack those lights. The tree's trunk, maybe. But amid the nearby crown, cities. Everywhere. And now Branka uses the strength of the other four to direct them back and down and in to the center point of them all. Before them, in a pool of mottled light, lies the primary avatar of New York. He curls atop a bed of ancient newspapers, asleep. There's a layer of pale dust on his black skin. He's been here for days. He looks so alone there, self-contained but unguarded, so young, so fragile. The thought comes, I will do anything for him, which is not Branka's thought. Manhattan, whose conviction is part knight-errant discovering the quest to which he needs to devote his life, and part raw lust. Still, Branka feels it with all the conviction of her own heart. Ours is what she does think, which surprises her, because she's never been the possessive type. Someone else in their gathering reacts to this, but there is pleasure in the reaction. Yes, flows the thought, echoed this time by all of them. It doesn't really matter anymore who it comes from. Ours. He is ours, and we are his, of course. But wait, this isn't good. How are you in my head? Focus. Branka pushes through their growing anxiety. Too many strong egos all tangled up together. This isn't going to last long. Where? The pool of light spins, and for the first time, they get a good look at the walls of the place where the primary lies, albeit fleetingly. There are white tiles in patterns, arches decorated with a mosaic of colored bricks. Branka gasps suddenly. She knows those tiles. There is no real sense of placeness or direction. Branka tries to stop the spinning, reaching out, down, toward the primary again, but she cannot control it. And far below them, as they pull away, primary avatar's one visible eye suddenly opens. Getting warmer, he says without words. Then he opens his mouth, and they twist and fall again into the yawning blackness between his teeth. Someone shakes Branka roughly. She resents the hell out of whoever's done this. Leave me alone, she snaps. I'm old. I need my fucking rest. OB, if you don't get up right now, I'm gonna pour cold coffee on you, and if that doesn't kill you with a heart attack, you're gonna die from cussing me out. Get up! So Branka pulls herself awake. She's lying on the rattier of the two couches in the staff meeting room, which means she's gonna be sore and achy whenever she manages to sit upright. Some of the key holders are busy upstairs. She can hear one of them distantly doing something with a circular saw, and it's a testament to how tired she is that she actually slept through that racket. There's still daylight coming in through the exhibit hall glass, so she couldn't have slept that long. It's maybe 8 p.m. In June, the sun doesn't really set till around 9. The others are still there, flopped across the chairs or couches. Vanessa's the only one on her feet. Manhattan's actually sitting on the floor near a couch, which Branka feels compelled to warn him against. He's not going to have any feeling left in his ass if he spends too much time on industrial concrete flooring. Too late, though, because he's blinking blearily as if he too just woke up. Brooklyn's awake, barely. Queens is rubbing her face, but then she rummages in her backpack and pulls out a packet of chocolate-covered espresso beans, popping a handful into her mouth.
She offers some to Brooklyn, and then Manhattan. And then someone else walks into their circle. A tall Asian man in a business suit, maybe in his 50s, with a face like carved marble and a mouth set in a permanent downturn. He's not Branka's main concern, however. The man is carrying someone else over his shoulder, a limp body in a more stylish suit, although grass-stained and filthy. "Oh, my God," Brooklyn says, reaching for her phone and immediately thumbing the emergency call button. Manhattan scrambles to his feet, shaking his head to clear it.
"Put that away,"
snaps the stranger to Brooklyn. He's got an accent, but it's unusual. Chinese-inflected British English, Branka decides.
"He's a city. Paramedics can't fix this."
They all stare, but Brooklyn puts her phone away. The Asian man flaps his hand rudely at Queens until she gets off the couch, and then he lays the unconscious man across it. This man is younger, leaner, Latino-ishly brown, although in a more ambiguous way than usual. He reeks of cigarette smoke. There's no blood that Branka can see, but he's gray in a way that has nothing to do with skin color. It's the strangest thing to see, as if the whole of the world is in HD color, but this man has somehow regressed to the days when televisions were just three channels and grainy black and white pixels. And there's something around him. Branka blinks, squints, and then when she shifts her awareness partly into city space, she understands. There is a kind of translucent envelope surrounding the unconscious man and suffusing his flesh. It has an attached line, like an umbilicus, which trails away to someplace in South America. Brazil, she guesses, though she's only 50% sure she could pick that country out on a map, and she can't remember the names of any cities there except Rio. She blinks back to find the older man examining her.
"Not useless, then,"
he says, which makes Branka stiffen in fury. Then he glances around at all of them, assessing in the same way, unimpressed by all.
"But none of you even notice his injury, even though he was within your own borders."
"Is a city? What's happened to him?"
Queens reaches out and touches the unconscious man gingerly, though she draws back her fingers at once when the envelope around him dimples preemptively, averse to her touch.
"And who the hell are you?"
Brooklyn's still sitting, but she shifted her weight forward a little, aggressively. Manhattan stands at her back, his whole posture very still. That they are both braced for some kind of attack is obvious. But Branka shakes her head, pushing herself to her feet so that she can wave them calm. Because she can see the stranger in the other place, too. And he's definitely not another variant on the woman in white.
"Call me Hong,"
he says, glaring down at the unconscious man. With a sigh, he bends and rummages in the man's jacket. The envelope does not resist him for some reason, and takes out a packet of cigarettes and a lighter.
"He said the situation here was a mess, but he's traumatic. I didn't think it could be so bad. Yet, here we are."
Manhattan looks around at the rest of them and mouths, "Hong Kong?" Branka nods. She's never been to that city, but she's seen its skyline in photographs. That one dick-shaped tower is distinctive, in her memory, and in the other realm, where she sees the totality of him. The city of Hong Kong is standing before them, scowling, and lighting up a cigarette.
"Hey,"
Branka says. When he glances at her, she points at the sign on the nearby wall, "No smoking."
"Fuck off,"
he says. It's said with so little heat, not even the same emotion that one would use to say no, that Branka's mouth falls open. She's not really offended, just surprised. Then, however, Hong coughs
and turns a sour look on the cigarette.
Oh, I hate smoking.
Then why the hell,
Vanessa begins. Before she can finish, however, Hong takes a deep drag from the cigarette. He leans down and blows the smoke out in a long stream over the unconscious man. It is as if his whole body absorbs the smoke. He shivers all over, and some of the grayness and blurriness fades. Now he is sepia-toned, almost as clear as a 90s-era third-tier computer monitor. Branka gasps in spite of herself. Manhattan comes forward quickly.
Maybe you should do that again, he says to Hong.
No,
says Hong, stubbing out the cigarette.
Once is all I could have done. And even that barely works because it's me that's doing it, not him. What he really needs is the polluted air of his own city. But it isn't safe to travel through macro space right now. And unless one of you is willing to get on a 10-hour flight to bring him there, as I just got off of a 15-hour one and don't want to see a plane again for a week, then I'm not sure what else to do to accelerate his recovery.
He slumps into a nearby chair, rubbing his face.
Okay, wait, Vanessa says. You're Hong Kong.
Who's he?
She points at the unconscious man. Hong lifts his face long enough to glower at her.
Sao Paulo, of course. Who else could he be?
Rio? Some whole other city?
Queen stares at him.
How are we supposed to know? Rio has not yet been born,
Hong snaps in an acid tone.
Only two cities in this hemisphere are currently alive, his and yours. That is why he is here. As the last city born, it's his duty to help you through your time. Now do you understand? Are you caught up yet?
Queen stares at him for an instant, stunned at his rudeness, and then she flares.
You don't have to be such a fucking asshole. Don't I?
Hong stabs a finger at Sao Paulo.
I see him, barely capable of manifesting in this world, half dead. But none of you seems remotely concerned. And none of you has asked the obvious questions of a supposed ally. Who did this to him? And how might he be avenged?
Sao Paulo, Sao Paulo.
Vanessa, murmuring to herself, slides off her chair and trots over to the meeting room fridge, starting to rummage through its freezer. The others stare, but Branka, long used to the girl's peculiarities, ignores this. Manhattan moves over to Hong and the unconscious man. Branka wonders if it is intentional that he has positioned himself between the strangers and his fellow burrows. Queens leans around him.
We don't know this guy, she says to Hong. You seem to expect that. But if he was supposed to help us, he didn't. Is he going to die? Sao Paulo still stands, doesn't it?
After delivering this cryptic remark, Hong leans back in his chair and regards them all with a hard, dispassionate glare. Brooklyn says with strained patience,
Look, we don't know this guy from Adam. I'm sorry your friend is hurt, but there's pretty much only one person who could have done this to him, if I understand all this correctly. We've been calling her the woman in white, but...
Hong is smiling. It's a far more unnerving smile than even Manhattan's, because it's so obviously fake. Branka's never seen active hate in Manhattan's eyes, and there's definitely a glimmer of it here.
She didn't do this, Hong says.
Brooklyn is so thrown as to actually exchange a look with Branka, who shakes her head, because she doesn't get what Hong Kong is on about either.
And you know this how?
Branka asks.
This kind of injury happens only when we step within the boundaries of another city, and that city takes exception to our presence.
Hong's gaze rakes over each of them.
In this place, at this time, only New York could have hurt Sao Paulo so badly.
Whoa, wait, that's crap!
Manhattan says, scowling. Belatedly, Branka registers that she's never heard Manhattan curse. What a strange trait for the island of fuck you.
None of us did this. We were all here anyway, except...
Silence. Slowly, inexorably, the realization hits. Brooklyn groans softly. Queen shakes her head in disbelief. Manhattan's expression hardens. Branka doesn't want to believe it herself, but the conclusion is undeniable. Hong watches each of them. Evaluating them, Branka realizes, checking to see if any of them is faking surprise or dismay.
Well, he concludes finally, his tone softening just a bit. I'm told that New York has 5 boroughs, and I see only 4 of you. And that one.
He nods after Vanessa, who has, by now, worked most of her upper body into the freezer. She seems to be digging for something behind the ancient tub of Neapolitan ice cream left over from the staff birthday party for Jess. Staten Island.
Attacked Sao Paulo.
And because it happened here in New York, where Sao Paulo did not have his city nearby to protect him, the attack has injured him badly.
No.
Manhattan gets up and starts pacing.
It has to have been some kind of misunderstanding. She's part of us.
Maybe. Branka rubs a hand over her hair. She's tired. Not enough sleep in the past few days, plus gallivanting all over the multiverse takes it out of you.
Maybe Staten Island thought he was the woman in white. Maybe this was an accident.
Or maybe,
says Brooklyn, who has moved to lean against the wall, her arms folded.
It's just like what always happens with Staten Island. We should have expected this.
Manhattan rounds on her.
What?
She laughs humorlessly.
Right. You wouldn't know, new guy.
Staten Island is the sore thumb of this city. The rest of New York votes blue, the island goes red. The rest of us want better subways, the island just wants more cars. You know why the Verrazano Bridge toll is so high? They wanted that. To keep the riffraff from Brooklyn out. So if anybody's gonna stab an ally in the back, it would be that borough.
We can't awaken the primary without all of us. Manhattan still hasn't raised his voice, but his words have grown clipped, his tone dangerous.
We need her.
Then one of us is going to have to go talk to her,
Branka says.
Convince her to work with us.
Silence. Hong sighs and takes a silk handkerchief out of his pocket, mopping his face and neck with it unnecessarily.
He was right. This is worse than London. Though I suppose that's why this Staten Island turned on the rest of you. If she figured out the danger.
What danger?
Branka frowns at him in confusion.
What's London got to do with?
Then Vanessa exclaims in muffled delight and emerges from the freezer. In one hand, she's got a plastic grocery bag, which has been partially wrapped around some kind of square tray inside. Immediately, she crouches and yanks the bag open. These are frozen, but you can still kind of suck on them, she mutters. I was worried my mala half-brother would eat them when he comes over to my place, because he would. So I stored them here at work, then forgot about them. Ha! And she triumphantly lifts a small round chocolate-looking thing out of the plastic container.
What the fuck?
Brooklyn says. Vanessa rolls her eyes.
Brigadeiro.
Some kind of Brazilian candy thing, like, oh, truffles. My dad's Portuguese, not Brazilian, but we eat them too because, yay, colonialism.
And it's not specific to São Paulo. But, hurrying over to the couch, Vanessa crouches and holds the Brigadero to the man's lips. If Branka hadn't already been staring, she might not believe what she now sees. Sao Paulo shivers all over and gains more clarity just at the touch of the sweet. Now he's full color, if still a bit undersaturated. Veneza murmurs something in Portuguese, coaxing, which seems to help in itself. He shivers brighter, closer to human color. Sao Paulo opens his mouth. She pops the little thing in, and to everyone's relief, after a moment, he starts to chew.
Ah, beleza. Fucking beautiful.
I was just faking the Sao Paulo accent, though. I hope he doesn't think I was making fun. Sao Paulo opens his eyes.
Valeu,
he replies, and then sits up. Queens claps in delight. Then she slides over to crouch beside Veneza, stage whispering, to ask if she can have one of the Brigadeiros. Hong regards Sao Paulo with disfavor.
Good. You're not dead.
Sao Paulo glares at him blearily.
It took you 3 days to get here? I had to take a plane. Planes take time. It still shouldn't have taken.
Then Sao Paulo's eyes narrow.
The summit. You notified them, and they balked. That's what took you an extra day.
Hong snorts a little in amusement, and then he takes out his smartphone and starts scrolling through it.
I've told you that it's nothing personal, Paulo. The old ones hate the younger cities on principle, and maybe they think you're arrogant. Of course I'm arrogant, I'm Sao Paulo. I'm also right, and they don't want to admit it.
Paulo extends his arms for some reason, examining them as if he expects to see something other than his own limbs. He flexes his hands, and whatever he feels satisfies him, so he relaxes.
So they'll deny the facts on the ground and make this to be incompetence on my part. You keep asking me why I hate them. This is why. I set their bones when I found you. Healed them with some Café de Ponto coffee that I had in the car. Thank fancy New York airport coffee shops for that. And thank me for my foresight. Brazilian cigarettes taste like shit, by the way.
Then Hong finds whatever he's looking for on his phone.
Here's a thing that should concern all of us.
He turns his phone around. Branka comes over to see, as do the others. Paulo glances at the image from where he is and sighs. The others gasp, but all Branka can make out is a blur. With an irritated sigh, she pushes through them and takes the phone from Hong, lifting it close enough to see. It's an aerial photograph of New York City taken at sunset. She's seen photos like this before, artsy shots taken from drones or helicopters and using specialized equipment. This one is typical in centering Manhattan, but unusual in not excluding the other boroughs from the shot. The helicopter seems to have been hovering somewhere around the midpoint of the island, maybe over Central Park, pointing south. In the foreground spreads Lower Manhattan, with its cluster of skyscrapers huddling uneasily on the tongue of landfill that makes up that part of the island. To the left, the image is slightly curved, a deliberate distortion probably meant to suggest that New York encompasses most of Earth, is probably Long Island City, Queens, and maybe Bay Ridge in Brooklyn, curving away toward the Verrazano Bridge. To the far right is Jersey City or maybe Hoboken. Branka can't tell. All of it sparkles in energy-efficient LED-lit squares. The photographer has added a slight orange filter to warm the coldness of the lights and give the whole image more life. It's New York at its brightest and most beautiful. Except for the farthest point of the image across a dark stretch of water from the lowermost tip of Manhattan,
Staten Island. Its lights are much dimmer. So dim, in fact, that Bronca wonders why she hasn't heard anything about a brownout. But as she squints at the image, she realizes the problem isn't dimness. It's that Staten Island seems much farther away than it should be. She blinks, shakes her head. No, the borough is where it should be, but its perspective is off. An optical illusion, maybe, caused by the distortion of the photograph? Whatever it is, it looks as if Staten Island is miles farther from Manhattan than it actually is. Her thumb bumps a button on Hong's phone by accident, and the image shifts to let her see that the photo is part of some kind of social media thread. Most of it's in Chinese, but there are a few English language posts. "More terrorism?" shouts one spelling-challenged alarmist. Hong takes his phone back. "This has never happened before," he says. "It's mostly